Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Okay, nobody's perfect. Look around. Boomers, Gen X, and Y, plenty to poke at there. But millennials take a lot of heat. Search the term and you'll get headlines like the worst generation, lazy, entitled, selfish. The TBS detective mystery and dark comedy Search Party puts a big satirical spotlight on millennials, taking the stereotypes, types, and portrayals head on and turning them toward a search for purpose. This hour On Point, the millennial generation and Search Party. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you watched Search Party, connected to the heroine's quest for meaning in her life? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Special welcome today to our new listeners at WGVU in West Michigan. We look forward to hearing from you. Two of the creators of Search Party join me now from Studio City, California, Sarah Violet Bliss. Sarah, welcome to On Point. Hello, Sarah. You're on. Welcome.
Hi, Tom. Hi.
Good to have you. And from Rancho Mirage, California, Charles Rogers joins us. Charles, hello. Welcome to On Point.
Hello, and thank you.
It's great to have both of you. So this came out right around Thanksgiving. It's a 10-part series. Is it mainly a binge-watch thing at this point, Sarah, or Sarah Violet, or are you? Is that how most of your listeners come at it?
That's how I believe they come at it. That's what it's designed to be watched as, and that seems to be everyone has been watching it that way, and you know, it's convenient,
and that's the way of our day. Yeah, Charles, you guys are both millennials yourselves. Is this a takedown of millennials, or is it having fun with your own people?
I think it's both. I think that we both see a lot to make fun of, but I think that there's a lot of beauty in our generation and in people and their flaws. So I think it does both at the same time.
There's a scene early on where Dory, played by Alia Shaquette, she's seen a missing poster and she's telling her friends about it. Portia, played by Meredith Hagner, and Elliot, played by John Early. And her boyfriend, Drew, is there, played by John Reynolds. They're talking about the disappearance. This is over brunch. They're talking about the disappearance of Chantal, a woman they all knew in college.
She's gone missing.
What do you mean, gone missing?
She's like a missing person. There's posters of her, like, all over the city.
Dory, what happened to her?
I mean, she's missing.
Well, where is she?
That's the question.
Why?
Portia, no one at the table knows.
Oh, my God, I feel like I'm about to cry.
I know, right? I mean, it's insane.
Dor, did I sleep with that waiter a few years ago?
I don't know.
He's acting like he doesn't remember me.
We've been severely under ketchup. Excuse me.
Co-creators Sarah Violet Bliss and Charles Rogers are with us from California. The show on TBS's Search Party. Somebody is missing, as in disappeared, and their first concerns are, did I sleep with that waiter? And we need more ketchup. Okay. What's the general frame you're putting around your generation here, Charles?
I think the idea is that Dory is at the forefront of this story, and she's somebody who represents people who want more in life and look around and feel that their life might not be filled with enough meaning. And
she's working as a personal assistant or something for somebody rich. They're all living in Brooklyn, and she's like a rich patron or client.
A job that's basically not a job.
Not a job. No.
That's
how does this look
job.
On me? And she's asked, and she responds.
Yeah. You know, whatever. And I think her friends at the beginning of the show represent the superficial aspects of culture that we sometimes look around and resent or want to feel that we aren't contributing to.
Sarah Violet, well, every generation has to find meaning. Is it harder? Has it been harder for millennials for some reason?
I wouldn't say that it's been harder necessarily. I think it's, you know, something that everyone in their 20s kind of goes through, whatever generation that is. And I think the only thing that makes it more like there's more of a magnifying glass on millennials is because of social media and how they put themselves on the internet for everyone to see. And when you put yourself out there, then there's always the risk of being judged. And that's just more what this generation is doing.
Maybe that's all there is to it. Maybe there's more. You all came out of NYU. You had last summer's Fort Tilden. Very funny. Your first film, I think, about a couple of Brooklyn girls trying to get to the beach. And you won the Grand Jury Award at South by Southwest with that in 2014. So, Charles, this has been kind of your focus sort of from the first film on. When it came time to do something for TBS, how did you come up with this sort of dark mystery comedy idea for TBS?
Well, we thought of the idea sort of in a vacuum because we made this pilot for Search Party with the production company Jax Media and with with Michael Showalter, who's created it with us. Mm-hmm. And so we just made a show that we wanted to see and that we knew that we could fill with ideas that come easily to us, or at least ideas that we want to express. And then we pitched it to networks. So TBS, I think, recognized what we liked about it. They agreed. They saw the same vision, and they've been so supportive about it. But we've really had the luxury of a starting point that is just what kind of show would we want to see on TV, and then let's hope that networks want it to be on their network. So, yeah, it's really been more about it's been a very creative process for us because it's really been up to us, and that's an incredible freedom.
Did TBS worry, Charles, that millennials might be fed up with, you know, having fun poked at them or having themselves dissected? I mean, there's also sympathy and empathy here. You can feel it very vividly, but do they worry, well, maybe millennials don't want to have fun at their own expense anymore?
Yeah, I think there's enough of a track record now.
Girls and all that shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's a tradition of this now that it felt safe to say that there's something about that's in the zeitgeist. But there was also something safe for us because when we made our film Fort Tilden, you know, we made it coming out of film school and we just made a movie that we wanted to make. And then we found out that the characters, because we designed the characters to be quote unquote unlikable. And that really upset a lot of people more than we ever imagined. And so, you know, I think for us going into this, we sort of expected the same result, but there's something about the conceit of a mystery and appropriating that genre that allows for people who would otherwise be upset about the portrayal and the cringiness and the, you know, I think it allows people an entry point. And that's really been like the greatest gift and surprise for us as the creators is to find out that because there's this mystery aspect, I think there's a little bit of a something for everyone in the design of the show.
More leeway there. You've got a sort of Nancy Drew kind of marketing going along with it. But it can be brutal. There's a point at which Dory, the lead character here played by Alia Shawkat, she's out for a job interview and we just jump straight into the middle of it. And the woman who's interviewing her just takes her down. You know, she's looks stuck to her, immobile, like she's got nothing to offer, that she's not equipped to teach tic-tac-toe. And Dory in Search Party is struggling here to respond.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Look, it's just not a good match. That's it. It's clear cut.
I just feel a little lost. I didn't even really want to do this program, really, but I thought it would feel nice. It's just like everybody can tell me what I can't do, but nobody can tell me what I can do.
Sarah Violet Bliss, there are plenty of moments in this show which are really funny. This one's just straight up sad. She just gets dressed down and told she's pretty worthless by the woman who's been interviewing her. And, you know, nobody's telling me what I can do. What's the portrayal there, SV?
Well, no one's really supposed to just tell you what you can do, I think.
Right.
You know, you have to figure that out on your own. And, you know, she's kind of frustrated and disappointed that, no, like, there's no outside encouragement. And this scene is you know, dramatic, but I personally find it funny. I feel that in my early 20s, I was kind of in situations like that, when there's like a strong, powerful woman who's like not taking any crap out of you, from you. In those moments, you have kind of this vulnerability that is hard to accept, but then ultimately, you know, kind of helpful. You know, that kind of kickstarts her trying to figure out what it is that she's good at, basically.
And almost dreaming her way into a detective role here when she sees the flyer up that Chantal is missing. Chantal is somebody that they knew in college. Not very well, really, Charles, but it's enough. She's looking for something, anything, to give her, I guess, a sense of mission here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the starting point for this entire journey. And her motivation is brought into question often in the show. And it's like, why are you so obsessed with this? And there's something that I liked about writing the idea that Dory is not very conscious of what's motivating her to become so obsessed with Chantal, because I don't think in real life we're ever very conscious of our motivations. I think, you know, she lists a lot of reasons, like she wants to be seen as a good person, or whether it's to be seen as a good person or to want to help someone, or because she thinks that she would hope that someone would help her if she was in that position. I like that the show brings, you know, Dory's motivations are always a little unclear, and they're always a little multidimensional, because I think the stuff that really drives us is usually not that clear.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about millennials in search of a missing person and maybe themselves in the TBS series Search Party. It's a kind of detective mystery and satirical comedy with a generation looking for its way. Co-creators Sarah Violet Bliss and Charles Rogers join us today. The entire season of Search Party is out on video on demand through your TV provider, online through TBS.com. They co-wrote and directed the movie Fort Tilden, which won the Grand Jury Award for Narrative Feature at South by Southwest in 2014. Now it's Search Party. You can join us this hour. Have you watched it? Have you been drawn into the hunt for Chantal? What did you think? Do you see a generation still in search of itself, its purpose there? Is there something different about millennials worth laying out in a 10-part series and comedy? Do these characters in Search Party sound like people you know? There's a vigil for Chantal. Her father makes a speech announcing some hashtags to help with the search.
Also, I've been asked to announce some hashtags for tonight's vigil. Pound sign, come home, Chantal. And pound sign, I am Chantal.
Dark and funny all at the same time. Dory gets out there, played by Leah Chiquette, looking to find Chantal. She goes down to the police station to report a sighting at one point. The officer takes her report and says, well, they'll wait and see.
But she needs help.
And if she calls me, I'll be happy to help her.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just let you get back to shooting black teens, because that's obviously all you do.
Well, what the hell did you just say to me?
I'm sorry. Sorry. I realized that was a very big thing to say, and I didn't mean it. You obviously just work behind a desk.
You don't get out of my office.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. That didn't go so well. You just go back to shooting black teens, because that's obviously all you do, and it doesn't take that anywhere. When the folks are doing their work for humanity, that gets kind of funny, too. Elliot, played by John Early, tells an old college classmate about the water charity that he's got going out of Brooklyn.
We're making these designer water bottles, and for everyone that we sell in the States, we're actually going to give one to one of the African villages in need. So,
I'm sorry, but obviously the problem in Africa is not that they don't have water bottles. It's like that they don't have water.
Believe me, I know. And we will also always set aside a percentage of our proceeds, and some of that we're going to share with the villages, Leslie. So
like a percentage of the percentage?
Okay, so you actually love this because it's all about like starting a conversation, creating dialogue.
And there we are with millennials on the table, Sarah Violet Bliss and Charles Rogers riding through their lives, having fun, some sympathy and a lot of fun with them at the same time. Kevin in Miami is calling. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air with Sarah Violet and Charles.
Hi, nice chatting with you guys. I wanted to comment on something. So I do marketing, and there was a conference earlier this year, this comedian, Adam Conover, and he's basically talking about the idea of how generations really don't exist. So I was curious, you know, when you hear people responding, saying that it's this attack on millennials, is that sort of your intent? Was that what you're trying to communicate? Because I'm 8 episodes in, and I'm so excited to finish the show, and that's sort of not the vibe that I'm getting from.
What's the vibe you're getting, Kevin? What's the vibe you're finding?
It kind of just is the generation. This little amplified, you know, whether if it's a narcissist or, you know, these all sort of, I feel like, constantly have existed within each generation. And she mentioned earlier about, you know, social media sort of just puts a magnifying glass to that.
It's great. Sarah, are you looking around at humanity or at your sort of age cohort when you have fun with the foibles of the characters in Search Party?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we never like approach the script thinking, okay, like what is it about millennials that we want to talk about? Because also we're really just focusing on this group. We're not, certainly not trying to say like encompass all millennials. This is very specific to New York, and you know, people that we see around the world. And it's not like we weren't going out to attack millennials, but we were with love. You know, I think there's something true about, like I said earlier, that it's just people in their 20s have this kind of like need to make their impression on the world and figure out what they're doing and how to do good. But that can be very clumsy, and there's a lot of, you know, funny things to make fun of when people are trying to do something important, but they can't put, you know, they can't, it doesn't come out perfectly for anyone when you're trying to, yeah, like start a project.
And yet, Charles, there's a kind of pretty visible menu of foibles and weaknesses that you're playing with here. Walk us through some of those, because you go at them again and again.
Yeah, I think narcissism is a huge through line in the show.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, I want to say that's specific to millennials, but then that's just a tale as old as time. I think self-awareness has allowed our generation to explore some of the more unsavory aspects of our existence. And I think that might be the defining difference between millennials and in other cultures, a willingness to be self-aware and a willingness to to explore the darker sides of things. Because I don't know that – I mean, I guess like Sarah Violet and I, one of the reasons why we collaborate is I think we're both very critical and empathetic. And so I think the show like represents the foibles of millennials in a way that like we have no desire to attack beyond presenting what's ironic or hypocritical about our generation. And that's kind of where the comedy is that, like, I don't think either of us want to push a point so that the show becomes political, because I think then it would lose its meaningfulness. So, yeah, I think generations are, like, what's strangely more interesting about generations is not the characteristics of the generations themselves, but that, like, overwhelming obsession about generations themselves. And so I think our starting point is just like what we want to say about people. And then I think inevitably, because of age range and context, millennial becomes sort of at the forefront of this. And then I think there's just an unavoidable marketing world of needing things to feel like they are specific to millennials. And I'm not afraid of embracing that, because if that's an entry point to us talking about mm-hmm. what we want to say about humanity, that's fine because we are talking about young people. So
get going with it. But that self-awareness you're talking about that you say makes it possible for millennials perhaps to talk about some of the more unsavory aspects of or darker aspects of human nature, like what?
I think the truth is a really big part of the show. I think everyone has a different version of the truth and denial. And I think everyone has a different relationship to denial and wanting their truth to be real and feeling like they're living the life they're supposed to live and just creating meaning. I know I'm just listing huge things now.
Yes, but, you are. what's unsavory about that?
Well, because there's an element of it that is inherently delusional. And I think that's I think that if you're I don't want to get too big and just start saying too many things, but I think that in the past, like certain generations were more religious or, you know, more tied up in different ideologies, and the internet has allowed us to become aware of a lot of different walks of life. And I think that conversation allows for more self-awareness. And I think there's a certain ideological aspect of our generation, which is to delude itself into thinking that you're living a meaningful life. And that is what social media has given us, is this opportunity to brand every aspect of our existence. And I think that's good and bad because it gives you a false relationship to you, to your own narrative of life. But it also does create a certain amount of self-awareness in trying to define yourself that other generations did not feel the pressure to do. So I think that is sort of inherently specific. That's sort of in the show.
I mean, but there's a sense of you're constantly portraying your fellow, because something like that, your fellow members of the cohort, if you want to look at it that way, as ineffectual in this show. And I don't know if that's something that every generation, if that's the way every generation has seen itself. And it's kind of part of the rap that millennials get sometimes. I don't think it's fair, but there are, you guys are kind of playing with that. Why that sense of the ineffectual?
I think because they're ineffectual because they're self-obsessed. And that is definitely an inherent trait to millennials. And also that's just a lot to mine comedically. And I think that's sort of like a classic comedic experience, is that you have, you're sort of like your crew of doofuses who can't help the main character along on this mm-hmm. mystery journey. So mm-hmm. I think that point about self-obsession intersected perfectly comedically with the point of our show.
And the crew of doofuses, many heroes have had those, I guess, or would-be heroes. Wayne in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Wayne, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thanks. First of all, the show's fantastic, as always.
Thank you.
I wanted to weigh in on this. I kind of stumbled across this show, and I'm not a millennial. I'm 51 years old, but I have two kids that are borderline hipsters. They're wonderful kids.
Okay.
But the sheer comedic value of this show and the fact that it's on TBS is staggering. The character development is fantastic, albeit like snapshot. And I have not watched a TV show in a long time that was as engrossing. And, I laugh out loud. My dogs are jumping. I watched it in binge style. And, man, it's just absolutely brilliant.
Does it look to you, Wayne? I mean, you've got borderline hipster kids. But does it look to you like Sarah Violet and Charles are mocking millennials or just working human nature through that lens?
You know what they've done is, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I see so many elements of myself and my crazy crew in these people here. And they've pretty much, they've taken what I would call like the seven deadly sins of socialization and society and being social, and they've extrapolated them into a format that is, if you can't look at this and see yourself in it, then, you've got to reevaluate a lot of things. And I just take it simply as great storytelling and great comedy. And, if I were to dare to dive into it like you guys are doing here, I'd drive my friends crazy because I wouldn't be able to stop talking about it.
we hear it, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne.
Wayne is in.
We need to hire you.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Talk to you after the show, Wayne. No, thank you very much. And that with Borderline Hipster Kids, no less. Wayne, let us hold that glowing recommendation. Get one more right here. Cookeville, Tennessee. Dustin is calling. Hi, Dustin. You're on.
Hey, gang. I was going to say that millennials in general, I think, fall into line or fall into queue a lot easier than any of the other generations since, like, the 50s or 60s. I wasn't alive then, so I don't know. But and another thing, when you look back at pictures in the 70s, everybody looked like a hippie. I think when we look back at pictures of this time, everyone will be a hipster. There's no way around it. But you guys have a good day.
Hey, Dustin, I appreciate your call. Hipsters and hippies and falling in line. I'm not sure what falling in line means here. Do you see these as boundary breakers or as, I don't know, cowed by the powers that be, your characters?
I mean, I would say that they are, you know, typically just trying to, like, stand out and yet fit in at the same time. You know, like, they're I think part of the like, criticism towards them is that they're not really, like, trying to do good. They're looking like they're trying to do good. But in that they are doing good, maybe, or it's, like, by default somehow doing that. Yeah, so I think that they are just trying to get by.
Trying to get by, trying to do good, but not trying to get necessarily too involved. Here's that scene where Dory and Drew, her boyfriend, are brushing their teeth, and they overhear a couple fighting through the wall of their apartment next door. The woman sounds like she might be maybe being beaten up.
Should we do something?
Well, there's no point.
Something terrible could be happening.
Yeah, something terrible is happening everywhere all the time.
Oh, my God. This is horrible.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
Okay, how about this? If we hear, like, a glass shatter or something like that, I'll go over there.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That could have been anything. I don't know.
That's, if we hear a glass shatter, I'll go over. A glass shatters, and he's going nowhere, Charles. I mean, the sense that, okay, but there's something terrible happening everywhere all the time. Surely that's a product of the media age upbringing where everybody sees all this horrible stuff in the world all the time. And are we supposed to be sympathetic to that view, or get off your haunches, man, and go do something?
I don't know what we're supposed to be, because I think we're overwhelmed by being so aware of how many terrible things are happening all the time all over the world. And I think we have a false sense of our relationship to it because of social media. It seems like we're all really involved in it if we are allowed to post about it or talk about it or represent ourselves as being somehow like a crusader of a cause. It really becomes a part of our own stories. And I think that's enough reason to want to avoid it. And that's kind of why sometimes I don't know what to pick and choose. Like when there's a war and three domestic situations and a horrible political situation happening, I don't know which one I'm supposed to post. And I think sometimes that's why we just sort of stick to causes that relate to our identity and maybe our own, you know, if you're gay or you're a woman or you're Black or whatever, then I feel like you end up maybe just sort of sticking to those things because that's more expected of you than the others. I think we've entered a really confusing age of social media and of charity and responsibility.
Self-awareness, but also so much awareness every moment of what the terror club attack in Istanbul, a war here, a war there, flooding down the street. What's a millennial to do? Search Party dives right in with a kind of detective mystery comedy, and its creators Charles Rogers and Sarah Violet Bliss are with us today. Are you watching it? You can join us this hour. What do you think? Do these characters sound like people you know? Is every generation searching one way or another for its mission, its purpose? And when do millennials get their time, their respect? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. End them with you.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about millennials in search of a missing person and maybe themselves in the TBS series Search Party. It's a detective mystery, dark comedy, all at the same time, satirical, maybe about a generation looking for its way. I mean, don't they all? Co-creators Sarah Violet Bliss and Charles Rogers are with us from California. You can join us. What do you think? Is comedy a good way to think through the challenges of a generation? Surely is. Is there something different about millennials worth laying out in a 10-part series, dark, about searching for that missing soul? There's a moment in Search Party when Dory meets Keith. This is a private investigator looking for Chantel, played by Ron Livingston. And he asks her why she cares so much about Chantel's disappearance.
Why are you looking for Chantel?
Well, ever since she went missing, I realized that I overlooked her. And it might sound, you know, annoying, but I feel like people have overlooked me sometimes.
I was overlooked. Maybe I'll look for her because maybe I overlooked her. But when it gets serious, you need some cash to do the job. Oh, friends may or may not be there. To pay for some information, she wants $5,000, Dory. She asks Portia and Elliot for the money.
Dory, first of all, we love you unconditionally.
I do too.
Okay, and we support you 100%.
And we are going to do anything for you.
As long as it's non-financial.
Is it just millennials? I'm not so sure. Kimberly writes to us, Charles Saravalet says, I'm a Gen Xer who binged Search Party and loved it. I could see myself and friends in the characters. Betsy says, I'm 60 years old and loved Search Party. Great writing, acting. She wants more. Diamond's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Diamond, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Very well. What do you think, Diamond?
Good. I haven't seen the show, but based on the clips, I think I will now. Some of the clips are really relatable. I've heard comments like that before. But I just think that millennials get a really bad rap for no reason. Like, whenever I hear complaints from, like, maybe an older person, my response is kind of like, well, who raised that generation? Like, we didn't ask for participation trophies, you know? Like, we're just given them, I guess. And I also feel that social media has played a big part in kind of how kids are raised. Like, we're raised with technology, and it's, like, fast and constant. Things are always changing. Like, for example, people always say, oh, millennials are always on their phones. Well, I've been with plenty of older people who are attached to their phones by the hip, you know?
Yep.
So I think technology has really affected how people have changed in general. It's not just millennials, in a sense.
I'm sure that's true, Diamond. I appreciate your call from Charlotte. I mean, Sarah Violet, participation trophies and always on the phone. It's easy to go to those things about millennials. You know, when you think of this age crew, do you see them shaped more by technology or more by the boomer hand of so many of their parents?
I mean, I think it's probably a combination of both, but I have an attachment to my phone too that I think is unhealthy, but I think she's right that also I see
look
other
around.
Generations
right.
also attached to their phone. Everyone's a little attached to their phone. And what I think is kind of ironic about it is that they actually are trying to stay connected. Like I'm so into my phone because I'm texting my friends, which is not me not participating and engaging with the world. I am engaging with the world through my phone, but at the same time, you know, it is much nicer to, you know, when you have a time where we're not looking at our phones, you know, like to actually engage with the present moment and people in front of you.
Yeah.
But you're not always in front of the people you love. I have, but, and in this generation, you know, have connections to people who live really far away, because and you're able to keep up that friendship because of technology. So I don't, you know, I think there's good and bad in,
sure.
in it.
I mean, Charles, Aaron writes to us on Twitter and he is thinking about what he hears of the show and wonders about real struggles that this generation is facing. He writes, lower earnings, less jobs, no pensions or long-term prospects. Where's this in the show? Where's the struggle?
Yeah, the struggle is, I agree with that. I think that there are very real struggles that are universal to all generations, especially ours, considering the economy that we were given out of college.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the show's focus kind of rests on problems and struggles that are a little more self-created, that we decide are just as weighty as problems like unemployment and the wage gap and stuff. And so, you know, I think because the show is sort of about delusion and selfishness, like I think the joke of our generation is how I think we do have real problems, but I think we invent a lot of them too.
Why? Why would that be?
I don't know. I think that might come from a need for attention. And I think there's a lot of victim-y stuff in our generation. I think everyone has an identity that was underserved in their development. And I think sometimes that's very true. But I think there's a race to decide who was more underserved along the way. You know what? That can't be only our generation's fault. We were definitely raised by people. So
not by wolves.
I think we should all take some credit for where we ended up.
Not just by wolves. Laura in Milwaukee. Thanks for calling, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I find myself kind of in between some generations. I'm 37.
Okay.
So my parents are baby boomers, and then now I work in the workplace with a bunch of millennials. And I see that in one generation, you've got the people who have always kind of known what to do, and they've had their past laid out, and there was a certain algorithm to life. And unfortunately, with millennials, there really isn't that same algorithm that can apply to them. So I think a lot of what we see as their narcissism and self-absorption is actually maybe a little bit of naivete in how the world works, which is great, because I think what they're doing is they're blazing a trail that's going to make some big change, because instead of just going with the flow, they're questioning why. And a lot of people can kind of see that as resistance or an unwillingness to participate or, you know, be in society the way society is. But instead, they're saying, well, "Why has it always been done this way? And why do I have to do it this way? And why can't I do it this way?"
Hey, when you say there's no algorithm for them, what do you mean exactly, Laura?
Well, let's see. You go to college, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, and then you do it all over again with the next generation.
I mean, that's the boomer way. So, what happened to that for millennials? Is it not out there?
I don't think so. I think people aren't getting married. One, a lot of they're not getting married. A lot of them are choosing not to have kids until later in life. In terms of career choices, it's kind of hard with the degrees that are being offered now and the college education that you're getting. How many people are actually getting the job that they went to get their degree for? And you're seeing a lot of that questioning. Well, I've got my degree in this, and now I'm building a career in here, and what does that mean for me, and where do I take that?
Yeah. Laura, I really appreciate your call. Sarah Violet, do you see a sense of resentment out there that there's no clear path, or is that freedom? And do you see power in, if it's naivete about the way it used to be or might be, do you see power in that to make change?
Interesting. I mean, I think I see both. Like, there's definitely kind of one of the like things that I felt right out of college was like, if someone would just show me, like, I can do all the hard work, but if I don't know where the path is, you know, like,
where do I put my shoulder here?
Yeah. Like, I'm willing to do anything I need to do, but where's the path? But that's part of, you know, your struggle is finding the path on your own, and that there is no path and everyone has a different path and la-di-da. Not feeling, I've always appreciated not feeling the pressure to be one way or another way. And I've like, but that, you know, is also part of the frustration of not knowing which way to go. Like, but it's ultimately, I think, better for growth to figure it out on your own.
Do you see power in what Laura in Milwaukee calls naivete, Charles, or does that come back to the ineffectual frame?
I do. I like the way she said it too, because I think there's an entrepreneurialness about millennials that is underlooked sometimes, because I think there's like two ideas about millennials that are thrown out there, either that everyone is a crybaby or that they're like go-getters. And I don't really understand how both of those can be stereotypes at the same time.
True, yeah.
but I think there's a lot of people. I think Sarah Violet and myself would be included in this because we took out student loans to go to grad school to figure it out on our own time. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people in our generation who are willing to take more time to figure out what they want. And I think that's really valuable because I'm in favor of people having kids later in life. I'm in favor of – that's a very privileged position, obviously,
sure.
And not everyone can do that. Mm-hmm. But if you do have the means or the will to do it, I think it's a good thing because I think the more you sit back and you look at what you want to contribute to the world, I think the more chances you have of being able to do that and getting your message out there. I just feel like we're also entering such a precarious political era, I think, that more now than ever, I think people should really sit back and look at what they want to contribute to the world, because in an environment that feels silencing, it's even more important to do so.
What's the algorithm for filmmakers or show makers these days? You guys have had a successful 10-part series now on TBS. Are you made, Charles? Made in the shade?
No. No, it's absolutely day by day.
Yes.
I have literally, on New Year's Eve, we all went around and said what we wanted. And I was just like, I just want to be happy.
Does that mean another project? Or what does that mean? Does it mean another season? What's that, on professional terms, like what's it take to sort of have the gears meshing and feel like in your business, it's happening?
I think that definition is very different for every person. I feel like when you're reaching for things, you don't exactly know what you expect with what it feels like when you get them. Mm-hmm. And we're so lucky to be in a position to have made a show and that people like it. And that was nothing that I was even necessarily expecting to happen in that way. And then you kind of have to be objective about what you want in the next step. And I feel like we're still figuring that part out. But right now we have a show and we have a second season to do. And I think we want to just keep saying things. And the story is going to change and our world is changing. And so I think we're just going to try and figure out what the smartest thing is to do with that.
That sounds very millennial. Emma in Columbia, Missouri. Emma, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a millennial myself, and I'm 13 years old. So I feel like we've basically earned a bad rep because of the way we use social media. Like, social media used to be a way to, like, contact friends and meet new people, and now it's basically just cyberbullying and showing off what we look like in our bodies. And we've earned a bad rep because that's basically all we do on there is we don't do any good with it. So
Emma, you're 13 years old. You're the youngest millennial in the country. And what, you're saying all millennials deserve a bad rep? Are you sure?
Not all, but I go to public middle school. So
yeah.
In my school, I don't have a phone. I'm calling from my mom's phone. And I don't have any social media. And I feel like I've gotten a lot farther than other kids have because I study more. I go to space camp. I do diving and sport.
Yeah.
And I try to stay active, but I don't brag about it.
Wow. You may be the thin edge of the wedge of the next generation coming up here. Charles and Sarah Violet, I mean, Emma's 13 years old and she's taking on millennials already as one of them. But I don't know. Maybe there's another generation coming up behind here, which is also going to pile on, Charles.
I think it's awesome that you're off social media and that you're 13. I didn't know that that was an option.
Mom's phone is still there within reach, but yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, with mom's phone, you can go to Search Party TBS. You can follow us.
All right. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, I think that's very brave of you. And sometimes I wonder what my life would be like with a little less phone and a little less of the internet in my headspace. And I remember like just drawing and playing endlessly when I was little. And sometimes I get depressed when I think about, you know, would I still be doing that to in my own way today if I wasn't biding my time, wasting time just looking at my phone. So I think keep exploring all those five hobbies.
Props to Emma. Is the outline of the next series on paper somewhere or in your heads, or is it done already, Sarah Violet?
We have an outline, but we haven't dug into the specifics of it. We're going to start writing for real next week.
Have you got a bag full of funny anecdotes that you've or things you've witnessed to bring the humor in, Charles?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think what is nice is that because we write in L.A., but the show shoots in New York, we had 6 months of shooting in New York to remember what New York is. So
that's good. Still based in Brooklyn then.
Yes, still based in Brooklyn. If you watch through to the end of the first season, the season climaxes in a way that, you know, you got to follow up on. So there's a lot of stuff to unpack.
You guys love those cliffhangers every single time. Got to have them coming back for more potato chips or more search party, as it were. It's pretty good, and we hear people responding to it pretty well right here. Takes on the foibles of a generation, but with the kind of understanding we hear in your description right here on the show. Sarah Violet Bliss in Los Angeles and Charles Rogers in Rancho Mirage, California, co-creators of Search Party. Sarah Violet, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
And Charles, same to you. Good luck. Keep it coming.
Thank you.
Millennials, hang in there. Hang right in there. And Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.